Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Sturkers and Radar Uncut, a monthly podcast brought to you by Ping.
Play your best.
Where we take an irreverent look at the game and the current hot topics. We'll also find out what's doing Radar's head in Radar's rants. And we've got a great guest as well on the show today, Radar.
Total nutter.
Pleased to report I've had no more feet requests.
Well, yeah, we've been putting out a bit out on social media. Last night you were holding a putt on the mat with those black stilettos.
With my heels on.
Looking like a pair of black stilettos in my eye.
The greenkeeping staff were complaining about me. But yeah, all good. And thank you to all of you as well for downloading and listening to episode one. All your feedback has been brilliant to have that support. Thanks to Ping again once again. Don't forget to follow us on socials, Sturkers Radar on Twitter and Sturkers and Radar Pod on Instagram. And also, I must just say, I'm going to get in a little big up early. What did I say at the end of last month's podcast, my prediction as to what would come true?
The next time, Radar, we sit opposite each other at the kitchen table discussing the world of golf, John Rahm will be a major champion.
Bang on, and congratulations, but it's not a big prediction. With a golf swing like that, and a he's a determined man, and what a player.
What a player.
The U.S. Open champion, the first Spaniard to ever win the U.S. Open.
You know, you look back, you did Memorial, and we talked about that in the Sky Sports studio. His reaction, it wasn't an immediate reaction. He didn't come out on social media or release a statement. He kept calm. He processed it, and then he released his statement. How good was his attitude in reacting to what happened, and how imperative was that in taking stock, realizing that there's bigger things going on in the world, COVID, people are losing lives, people are losing jobs. He took it all on board and said, okay, I can react to this in a positive way. How much kudos do you give to him for that?
Huge kudos. I couldn't have done that. You walk off the 18th green at Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial at Muirfieldville, is such a huge championship, and your defending champion. He's won it the year before. And he walks off on Saturday night and he's six in front. And they go, you're out. You've tested positive. You have to withdraw. Yeah, he was upset, visibly upset straight away. But then they took him inside and he got out in the buggy and he waved to the kids and... You know, I imagine when he got home, he would have kicked a few doors in, but it was just full credit to him. And this week I was asked, before last week, the US Open, who's going to win? I said Xander Schauffele, but I hope it's Rahm because what happened there at the Memorial. And for it was the golfing gods, they never disappoint. They looked down on him and they gave him that win. And he won it very well. Just a fantastic win. Very good for John and his family, and very good for Padraig Harrington because he's going to be tough in that Ryder Cup.
Oh, so tough. You know, he said he believes in karma, doesn't he? And he said, it's not about what happens to you, it's how you react to it. And I think that's a lesson for us all, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly is. That was just very... Look, I think John Rahm's a grumpy-looking golfer. He's one of my favourite golfers to watch. But to watch his reactions, I think he's a bit of a whinger and a whiner. But that's gone away now with me. I really do take my hat off and I admire him so, so much.
I know there's so many highlights, but I look back, I said this to you just before we started recording, that up and down on three to save par was just gorgeous.
Yeah, that was
in your words.
On an upslope, in the thick rough down there, short side, a little par three, 200 yards of played. And to miss it there was a terrible shot off the tee. And he just made amends. Like, it's so easy to go under that and leave it down there, or to get too much of the ball and hit it 40 feet away and then make a bogey or even three putt. He turned a potential five into a three, and that might have given him the injection, a spring in his step to go on to win. He hit so many good shots. He really did. Every shot seems to come out of the middle of the club face. It makes a different thud. When Stenson was at his best, he made a sound that not many people did. Tiger, the great players, he's got that. Rahm, he's a big old beast. Yeah, that's what he is. You wouldn't like to feed him, would he? You'd take him out for dinner. You'd have to give him a cow. You couldn't buy him a steak. But
that's the thing when you see him. I mean, he's a big man.
Oh, he's a proper golfer, and he's still young. How many has he got in him? Can he get to Seve's five? That's the best. We've got Seve at five majors. We've got Alaphilippe at two majors, two masters.
That'll be my next prediction. Yes, he can get to five.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. You know what? I'd say you're right.
Right, Radar's rants. What have you got for us this episode, Radar?
Well, it's me. I'm going to rant at myself because I've always said that I didn't like the way Bryson DeChambeau has built up himself and trying to belt it as hard as he can. And I didn't like the way he played. I'm going back on that. And I apologize. I was wrong. I think he's a very intelligent golfer. He hits it hard because he can, and he wants to constantly improve himself. And when the flag's on the left, he'll hit it right and vice versa. He misses it in the right places. Yesterday, US Open back nine didn't happen. He caved in a little, but he didn't choke or anything like that. We know he's won a US Open and he's won all sorts of things. But I'd like to take that back. I am a big fan now. And to be honest with you, it's taken me a long time to admit this to myself.
Radar, he's got his fist out and he's about to hit the table anger.
I really have been sort of slagging him a bit.
I've been party to it.
Yes, and I've thought to myself, you know, should I be doing this? But I stuck with it. I stuck with the slagging. And I thought, but now, no, I apologize, and I'm a huge fan of the man, but I think he'll turn it down. And I was looking at him last night when I was doing some commentary, and he slimmed down a little.
I was absolutely going to say, he's not as bulky, as bulky.
He's slimmed down a little, and maybe he's going to rein it back in a little bit.
He's on two protein shakes a day instead of eight.
Was he on eight?
Something like that.
Yeah,
but he really has. I think you look at him when he went from normal Bryson to big bulky Bryson to Bryson now. Completely agree with you.
Yeah,
completely agree with you. Can I also say I've never heard you apologize.
Yeah, I know. Comes with age, doesn't it?
I mean, this is a first, ladies and gents.
Yeah,
boys and girls.
Well, I really do feel as though I need to go. Yep, I was. I'm not going to say I was wrong.
don't go that far.
I'm going to say, yeah, look, I like watching him now. I didn't like him thrashing the golf ball, but you got to admire him, don't you? You have to admire him to try to re-revolutionise the game and the way he plays it. And I'm going, well, you can't do that. You go, who am I? Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson's a great player. And I apologise and I take it back and I was wrong.
So you've apologised and
you're
wrong.
Tape that, everybody, because you'll never hear it again.
This is going to be replayed in future podcasts. Radar's wrong for once in his life. Should we get our first guest on?
Why not? Talking about nutters.
Delighted to say that we are joined by the much-missed on tour, David Lynn. Linny, nice to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. That's a nice welcome.
Linny, what happened? All of a sudden, you're playing on tour and you had the tour card in the States, in Europe, everywhere. And then you just disappeared one day. I mean, what happened? Where did
you
go?
Kidnapped.
Where did you? Did you? You and Robert Allenby. Not in the back of a trunk or anything like that, was it?
Oh, I don't want to be kidnapped with Allenby, do I?
No.
To be fair, if 2012 hadn't happened and I got that exemption to America, I would have probably called it a day around then. But, you know, the fact I got into America, that was that was just a great year. It was so enjoyable because everything was brand new, fresh challenge, new courses every week, new people. And I absolutely thoroughly loved it. But having been away 42 weeks in 2013, I was just sort of foaming at the mouth. I'd said to my caddy at the end of that year, I said, I won't be doing my number in America next year, which he couldn't understand. And consequently, it just sort of brought it to a head really then at the end of 2014. And yeah, having only just won in 2013 as well.
Do you regret the decision you made?
No, I think I got it bang on for me. And my mum and dad, they weren't happy when I did what I did, but they sort of sit down with me now whenever we're together and we're having a drink, and they look at it and they think I got it sort of right for me, really, which is, it was important to do at the time.
Lily, I remember I was there in Portugal 2013. You just, you know, you won. I remember that victory, and then suddenly you were gone.
I know.
And we still miss you.
Playoffs in America.
Yeah,
and then won. But, you know, I know you see, and everyone sees a difference. Yeah, they go and see me win, but they don't know what's going on in your head. It weren't just an overnight thing. It had been building up for years. You know, so too much of a good thing. You know, I certainly don't regret. Wouldn't change anything about certainly getting on tour and doing all that, because it was just mega. And you know, so many great people I've met, so many great stories.
Would you say, Linny? Am I right in saying, before you tell us why basically you did pack it in, was it? Like, you get up on a Tuesday morning or a Monday night packing for a Tuesday flight, you go, oh, wow, here I go again. I'm off now. I'm going out to here spending 3,000 quid, and I don't actually know whether I'm going to get my 3,000 back. And you know what? This is so mundane. It feels like you're on a merry-go-round later in your career. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. You've been there, haven't you? And that's exactly how I referred to it, is you're on this carousel. And, I mean, you might only play, well, in a normal season, you might only play 26 events. But for the other 26 events that you're not playing, you basically, I felt that you wrap yourself up in cotton wool a little bit. So if you had 1 week off, you'd have parties going on here and there. And you'd be, like, watching yourself with your drink, for instance. You wouldn't want to have too many drinks, too many sherbet lemons. Because you know you're going away playing in another tournament the following week. And then if you had 2 weeks off, you'd sort of, well, for me, this is how I did it. I would party the first week away, not touch my clubs. And then I'd slowly sort of start practicing again in week two, still at home, but obviously ready for going back on tour again. So, yeah, I think you have to sacrifice your life to a degree. But what a great life it is, you know. And like I say, there's no regrets in sort of, you know, I've got to see the world, play on some of the best golf courses, playing some great tournaments, and they're just great memories now.
Yeah, respect to you, I think, as well. It's a brave thing to do, isn't it? Nobody at the time was expecting you to call it quits when you did. But as you said, and we've just seen and heard with Matt Wolf, and we'll talk about that later in the podcast, you know, you don't know what's going on in anybody's head or anybody's life. And certainly these professional athletes, we see the glitz and the glamour, but we don't know each athlete is individual, what they are going through. And I guess, Linny, so for now, you quit golf. Obviously, family life's very important to you as well. I also understand you're a bit of a property hotshot now. You own most of Hull, don't you, I think, I heard?
Well, I don't know about Hull, but the whole idea in my head was to just try and accumulate some sort of portfolio to basically provide income for when I finish. And since finishing, I've managed to get involved in some house building.
But you've got your own portfolio as well, haven't you? That's, as you said, that's always the kind of rental properties that's always been a massive interest for you. It's good to hear.
Yeah, well, Linny's sort of, you know, Linny'd have his five, you know, when he went to school and you get your play lunch money and your mum tied it in the corner of the hanky, Linny'd still have that. He'd still have that. Back in the day when they came on tour, Steve Webster came on tour at the same time. probably two of the tightest men on tour and renowned for it. I would have thought, David.
Come on, Liddy. What's the comeback there?
He's an Aussie, isn't he? You can always tell when he's talking shit. He's lips move.
This is my best attempt at the truth, David.
Lenny, on that, I did want to pick your brains on the article that you did recently in Golf Digest, ahead of the PGA Championship at Kira, obviously your close call there back in 2012.
So I became quite popular that week before.
Yeah, you did. And obviously the media interest, and as I said, that piece in Golf Digest. But was that a fair reflection, that piece? I know, for instance, the line that Harrington said. Harrington talked about, and we've heard it with Kevin Kisner recently on tour, saying, you know, there's only certain courses I can win on. And if I don't win, week in, week out, I know that I can pick up, you know, sizable checks. You guys and the guys now are making serious dough week in, week out. It's a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I know Harrington said in the article, you know, he sort of felt that you wanted the money, or the money was the motivation for you. Was that fair?
It wasn't. It wasn't. And I think Radar will probably back me up here. I mean, when you actually play in a golf event, you just want to finish as high as you possibly can. And if you could make top 10, you'd want top 20. If you couldn't, and that was all your goal. You just wanted to keep finishing as high as you could. So I get what he says. When it comes down to the nitty gritty, if I'm stood in the middle of the final hole and I need eagle to win, it's par five, water everywhere, water's all down the left, I would always hit it right. I mean, but which pro wouldn't hit it? I mean, I think sort of eight or nine pros out then would probably hit it right anyway. I sort of understand what he's saying, but I don't. I mean, ultimately, if I was in it for the money, I had the American card and the European card, so I finished when I had both those cards. So if I was ultimately in it for the money, then I would have continued. So I sort of disagree with him a little bit in that way. But again, he's a player who has gone through, I mean, money is no object. So he literally can just, you know, be as aggressive. And I think you have to probably get to a certain, I don't know if you like, an amount of money in the bank before you can apply that sort of mindset, which I don't know.
I'm totally with you, Lenny. At the end of the day, look, if you've got a chance of winning and it costs you taking the risks, and you could come undone taking the risk of winning, and it costs you $100,000 to take that risk, you're not taking that risk, are you? Really? In our position, as you and I, as Harrington.
Yeah.
Well, we can take that risk. You know, when you've got 50 million in the bank, of course you could take that risk. But when you haven't, and you're trying to feed people, you're trying to fund your profession and trying to make a success out of your golfing career, you can't take unnecessary risk. It's just too expensive.
I must admit, most of the time, you'd be coming down the stretch as well. So, for instance, I'll give you a story after when I finished runner-up at the PGA. Absolutely true. I've walked off the course, should have birdied the last five. I was just, you know, I was playing solid. And I did all my media commitments and everything. And then I got taken back into the clubhouse, went upstairs, and my missus was there, and my caddy, and Rory McIlroy's dad and his partner were on the table next to us. I then had a glass of wine in hand, and I just sat there, and I literally just went. And we looked over at Wayne, and we're going, wow, amazing money. And then Wayne just went, he went, Lenny, how much have we won? I went, shit, I've not even thought of that, Wayne. The next minute, Wayne gets on the internet, and he's like, oh, Lenny, honestly, so I'd not even give it a thought. But I must admit, there's been tournaments where you might have a six-footer on the last, and you're right up there, and it would cross your mind, you'd be thinking, it's probably a bit of a number here, to be fair, you know, so... You do become aware of it in certain situations. But most of the time, like I say, you were so hungry for high finish, as high as you could. And at the end of the day, it's probably what every golfer who gets out there. They're just interested in playing well and finishing as high as they can.
Yeah. Do you miss it now, Linny? You know, you were quite the comedian on social media. Do you kind of miss that camaraderie, that lifestyle?
There's bits of it for sure. Certainly miss the crack in the evenings with the caddies. They were always great value. Range talk on a Tuesday, Wednesday, you'd have a bit of fun. But I always thought my favourite night on tour was always Tuesday night.
Yeah.
You'd go out.
The Tuesday nightclub. Boxall was conducting the orchestra.
He still is when you go away to European tour event.
And then it all builds on Wednesday and you know the gun's going off Thursday. And then your next favourite night was Friday night if you were obviously playing the weekend. So, yeah. And travelling to weird and wonderful places is something that, that I do miss a little bit now as well. Because I've been on this carousel that long, that you get back home, and so you get your first year at home. And I'd be turning around to Mrs. going, so when does the sun come out like? When does summer start over here? Because I've got no idea. When does winter start? When does it start to get real cold? Because you're always away. You just you flirt in for one night, and then you're back out if you do knit back. That was quite bizarre, really, to not know how the season sort of, when they come about at home.
So we've got spring, summer, autumn and winter. Lily, we've got with the little segment, you only our second guest, so we had Andy Sullivan on our first pod. It's a little section called I'll Have a Mulligan, Please. So a segment where we ask a player one thing that they could redo in their life. It could be in their career, in their golf career, or off the course as well. What if you could have a mulligan, what would you choose?
A mulligan on the golf course, and it's in a practice bunker. So you'd expect me to say a shot in a tournament. So I'm out in China, and I'm on my second week of a two-weeker in China, and I've just finished third the week before. So I'm buzzing, and I'm ready to get going again. And I've got it on string in this bunker. And so I've opened the face wide open. And I'm trying to just sort of start in a few parachute ones now, you know, it's a bit fancy. And there's this girl on the chipping green, and she's collecting a few balls. And I have knifed this thing like you have never seen. And you know that little white lump on your wrist? It's just plunder on the wrist. Well, she has screamed and gone down like a sack of spuds. So it just so happens she's caddying for the bloke I'm playing with, this Indian kid. So she's rolling, howling. So I'm now in bits. I'm shaking. I'm just like... So we are literally going to the tee now, and she's rolling around on the green, and he needs to get another caddy. Medical's coming out. So we go out and play, and I'm just a useless piece on the course. And we get back in, and she's now back in the... She's in the clubhouse waiting for him as he comes off. So they've only gone and put dry ice on her wrist as well. So her wrist is now blistered and ballooned. Oh. So if I could have a shot back, it'd be that one. I'd probably just take a free drop.
Well, it's only episode two, but I think that one's going to be quite hard to beat for our series. And Lily, who was your best golfing friend on tour? Tell us a story that we might not have heard before.
Yeah, there is a story. And I'm going to say the story about two of the last. I can't incriminate anyone here.
You can.
We're at the HSBC World Champs in China.
You spend a lot of time in China,
I love a bit of China. And it was at that course where there was a par four, the last, and it hugs the water. I think Poulter won that, 2013, I'm thinking. And allegedly, these two
Mission
guys,
Hills.
These
Mission
two,
Hills, that
these
was.
These two players. Yes, it was Mission Hills, you're right. So, these two players are a bit bored on the practice range, and they decide to fill their pockets with gold, take a couple of clubs and go to the hotel, which sat on this hill, right up above the 18th green. So the final few groups are coming in, and I believe that these two players have got the groups on television, they're watching it. So when they finished, next minute, it was balls down on the floor in the middle of the room, patio doors open, launching seven irons onto the 18th green. And I think the record was 8 balls on there in Southern Group. I wonder what the fine would be for that.
Are we allowed names?
No names.
Can't cross them up.
One of them. You could probably guess who one of them was.
Yeah. Linny, before you go, have you got time for a quick nine?
Yeah, go on.
Best city for a night out?
London.
Best present to yourself after a fat check?
Car.
Which one?
It was a Ferrari. I did do that after I won my first tournament.
Flash, Harry.
Hey, Radar, talking about cars, have you still got your BM?
No, mate, no, I'm driving around the 2004 Corsa with a dint in the front wing. Swing you most admire on tour?
Dagwood.
Favourite event?
Masters.
Favourite drink and drinking partner?
Red wine. And all my veggies up here.
What's your favourite quote or mantra? What are you trying to live your life by?
Carpe diem.
Favourite club?
Rhinos.
Yeah, I like that. I thought you were going to say the Bel Air at the Belfry.
Standout career shot? Apart from the one you knifed
out of the bunker.
They took out the little Chinese lady's wrist. Celebrity crush, yeah. It can be a man crush.
Oh, no, I'm... what's the name now? Who was with Hugh Grant.
Elizabeth Hurley.
Liz Hurley.
Is that the, yeah? Shane Warne. Yeah, he dated her for a long time.
I'm going to change my crush on
her. Yeah, it's a nice crush. Yeah, but listen, mate, I've really enjoyed it. We've got to get together, Lenny, you and I, for, you know, get you down, we'll play some golf just for a laugh, man. We'll just, we really do miss you.
We do. Top man, Lenny.
Can I just clear something up? Because I think this went over your head radar about your BM. One of my lasting memories of you is driving into the British Masters at Woburn. And you had your window down, you're driving real slow, and you just pulled up and you went, do you like my BM? And it was an old, knackered brown Mini.
Mate, I am the king of the knacker. I am. I like a knackered car. I've been stung so many times on cars. You know, you go out and spend 40 grand on a car and you drive it out there and then, you know, a year later you go for the trade-in. How much can I get my car? We'll give you 16. You know the rules, Lenny.
We're in the wrong trade.
Yeah. But, mate, it's been a blast. Lovely chatting to you.
Yeah.
Lenny, thanks so much. It's been great to have you with
worries.
Us.
Nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you. I think you've got a dentist appointment now, so we'll let you go.
I have.
Go and get the Hampsteads fixed.
Chat to you soon. Take care.
See you guys.
Bye, mate.
See you.
Bye.
We've missed Lenny, haven't we? He's a top guy.
He is. He's look, if you're on the wrong end of his wind-ups, it can be quite hard. But Lenny is one of the good guys, yes, and a fine golfer as well.
Look, we were talking about social media a little bit there with Lenny, and I think one of the big talking points that we've been following very closely, the whole Brooks versus Bryson war of words, the feud. Now, the PGA Tour have introduced the Player Impact Program, haven't they? They're sort of rewarding, I guess, social media engagement, hits on Google searches, all this sort of stuff. Brooks Bryson, I'm going to get your take on this. I don't quite get it. I think in golf and sport, we want to see rivalry. We want to see guys going head-to-head. We want to see the best in the game really going after each other. But Brooks and Bryson, for me, it just seems a little bit playground. It seems quite contrived. Are they doing this? With regards to the Player Impact Program, are they trying to bolster their ratings, or do you actually think there's just a severe dislike of each other?
I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know. It's there's 30 million or there's some obscene amount of money for people who create media attention. Like Tiger's going to be up there as well, isn't he? With that,
of course.
I mean, with the accident, that's going to be there, but. You know, it's a lot of money that they're getting together. Maybe they've got together and down the pub and, you know, let's have a pint and chat about this. Let's go at each other and pretend we hate each other.
Yeah.
I don't really know, but I don't think they dislike each other. It doesn't really happen in golf. It's never really happened before in golf. And I don't think Bryson is that kind of guy.
I don't really think it's Bryson. Brooks? Bryson irked Brooks, and I think he just has taken a bit of a dislike. For whatever reason, I think he's just got to him. And I actually think it's got to Brooks a bit now.
Do you think Brooks is the sort of guy, so they're in the classroom and Brooks is the tough guy at the front throwing chalk at the teacher, and then he's picking on the guy down the back, the gawk, who's playing with his science Bunsen burner?
A little bit, because I feel it's like it's a little bit bullying tactics. Like, I like Brooks. I feel like I don't know Bryson that well. I haven't interviewed him that many times. I feel I've interviewed Brooks a ton, and I think I'm a big fan. I like kind of how he went about his business, that he almost like let his golf do the talking, and he was this superior, you know, professional when it came to the major championships, everything he's achieved. But I just feel like this is just a little bit schoolboy. Yeah. And I feel like I've lost a little bit of respect for a guy that I had a lot of respect for. And I kind of feel like, you know, Bryson's doing what he's doing. He's, whether you like it or hate it, have respect for how hard the guy's worked and what he's trying to achieve. And obviously has now become a major champion. So why, I'm not a fan of it at all.
Yeah, he's picking on him, yeah. It seems like it. Sometimes things aren't always as they seem. We know that. But let me ask you a question.
Here we go.
If they got in the ring,
yeah,
with their gloves on, Bryson and Brooks, who do you reckon would be the last one standing?
I'm going Brooks. I think.
You think?
Yeah.
You think Brooks would punch Bryson's head in?
Brooks is a big guy, and I think. Yeah, I'm going Brooks. You?
I don't know. He might be a little sleeper, old Bryson. He might knock old Brooks out.
I think Bryson seems, two of them, I don't know, I just feel a bit sorry for Bryson. I feel like Brooks has been a bit mean and a bit of a bully, and I need him to stop.
You heard it. There it is.
Matt Wolf.
What Sturka says she gets.
Matt Wolf at Radar was, for me, you talk about kudos and respect to a player. We knew that something wasn't quite right, didn't we, with Matt Wolf. He was struggling badly. Then we didn't see him for a couple of months. Then he comes out at the US Open and said, hey, do you know what? I've really been struggling with my mental health. I think, A, to take time out, and B, to admit it. You know, these guys are superstar, millionaire athletes. He's, what, 22 years of age now, Matt Wolf. PGA Tour winner, nearly won the US Open at Wingfoot. Respect to him for coming out and saying, I'm struggling. I needed to take time out. And I think, how important is it for that awareness in professional golf?
In anything. It's like we all live different lives, and he wherever he walks, people who play golf know who he is. And obviously he's struggling with it. And to get help and to say at that young age, whether he got help from his family, I don't know. They said, let's sort this out. I'm totally with you. And he had a good chance of winning yesterday. Look, he's such a dynamic player. No one swings the club like that. When we first saw Jim Furyk come out and he sort of had the wiggly swing, we thought, whoa, what's going on here? Now, this guy, he's taken it to another level. This is like the helicopter move at the top. The club's totally in the wrong position. It's almost pointing in the wrong direction. Then he drops it down. But you get him down there at impact, he's absolutely perfect. And when he sets up and he starts getting the left hip flipping, and it's like, whoa, what's going on here? I first saw pictures of him or video of him when he was 17. Robert Lee actually sent it to me. He said, have a look at this. And I went, whoa. Then I sent it to my brother, who's a golf pro in Hong Kong at Clearwater Bay. And he went, well, this guy's got no chance. I went, whoa, look at this. Look at this guy's just, there's so many ways to do it. Like when we were kids, we had to, we were taught a certain way in my era. But now you can go and you can play very many ways, and I think we'll see better golfers for it. And getting back to it, yes, full credit for Matt Wolf for saying, yeah, I need some help. And I imagine he's continuing to get help. And great.
I wonder how, I mean, Beef's come out quite publicly and talks about some of his, you know, mental health issues. I mean, Linney alluded to it. I mean, it was the right time for him to go, and I think, for sanity, mental health-wise, he needed to step back from the game at that point. Did you ever, you know, we're buddies, we can chat openly about this. Did you ever struggle? Did you ever get to a point when you were playing when golf got too much or life off the course got too much and affected you mentally?
Yeah. Life on the road was quite, even though I love travelling, but I enjoy travelling more now being a commentator than I did as a golfer. Yeah, I remember one story. You can pull out of a golf tournament. You're allowed to pull out with injury. Mm-hmm. And I called the official over and I said, listen, I've got to pull out of the tournament. He says, what's wrong with you? I said, I'm injured. He says, what? I said, well, I'm mentally injured. I'm mentally injured. What's the difference between having a bad arm or a bad finger or being mentally scarred and injured? And I had to keep going.
But it's true.
It's true. I mean, I was tired. When I got to about 40, I retired. But it was like I was just done with the week in, week out, hotel, hanging the clothes up, going out to practice on Tuesday, playing in the pro-am, going out and playing. You're putting all in. And look, in golf, disappointment far outweighs adulation as a professional golfer, unless you're Tiger Woods or one of these superstar golfers, which we all can't be. And you're just on a merry-go-round. And it sometimes, you know, it does do you. And the 2 years I had off after, I went back to Australia from playing the European Tour at 40. I had a great 2 years. I just hung them up and didn't play too much golf at all. And but yeah, I've had my issues, but not with mental health. I've never really suffered with that sort of thing, but I'm lucky.
Yeah, but I think it's important that guys do talk about it, and then it makes it more open for others.
Brilliant. Very important.
Yeah. And we must just touch on Phil Mickelson as well. I mean, a win for the ages, you look at that, the oldest major champion. It was sensational. I mean, I didn't think he was going to pull that off. Honestly, how did you rate his chances?
No, I didn't. I didn't think he'd win another PGA Tour event, let alone win the PGA Championship at Kiawah Island, a major. His sixth major. I think it was just incredibly, an incredible story. And it goes to show you, like, Watson, back when he lost in a playoff to Stuart Sink at Turnberry in the Open Championship, he was 59. We're talking about Mickelson at 50, just turned 51 now. But if Watson would have won that, you know, and I still, anyway, talking about Phil Mickelson, but he hit that 8-iron to the last and it landed on the front in the perfect spot and ran over the back of the green. That was as good as Mickelson's feat. We forget about Watson's one at Turnberry. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I mean, I was there at Turnberry actually, and obviously Lee Westwood as well, what he's doing now. And I think that's what we love about golf, isn't it? That's what makes it so special. But I think the golf course played into his artistic style, into his creativity, intuition. And I didn't think Phil Mickelson had another major in him. And I just thought it was incredible. The scenes at 8, I mean, it was like Tiger Woods, wasn't it? The Tour Championship, the fans going absolutely nuts. I'm not sure it was COVID secure necessarily, but it was just incredible.
It was. No. Yep. It was. And he didn't play well last week. He doesn't really like the golf course. But Phil Mickelson, I know one thing, that he's got another 20 majors and exempt for another 5 years to all the majors. I don't think the Champions Tour will be too...
No, Rich Beam's shaking in his boots, isn't he? About the Champions Tour, and Phil Mickelson obviously he's already picked up two times, hasn't he?
Yeah, he won his first two, I think.
But I just think, amazing story, and I think respect to Phil for going out and believing he could still do it, and I think it was great for golf. Right, Sturk, you've had Radar's rants. Sturk, to me, I get my little opinion, and something that's been irking me is, can we talk Olympics?
Of course, you can talk about it.
Now, I know your take on this. So the Olympics, for me, is the pinnacle. It's the biggest, the greatest sporting achievement, sporting occasion in the world. As a golfer, I get a green jacket is always going to trump a gold medal, because in your sport, you want to win one major championships. I totally get that. What's slightly stirking me is, I think, some of the players' reaction to the Olympics. So, for example, Justin Rose, gold medal winner in Rio, has talked about this being the absolute highlight. Now, I know his wife, Kate, obviously former international gymnast, he gets the whole Olympic thing. A lot of guys don't. I think Dustin Johnson's been quite disparaging about it. And I think my gripe is just, I think the players, for me, some of the players haven't been showing enough respect to the Olympics. So, for an example, after the US Open, Colin Morikawa qualified for the Olympics. He said, I'm so excited, I'm going, I can't believe I get to go, to be on this team, to heading to Tokyo puts a smile on my face. I'm really excited about it. He's effusive, he's ready, he wants to go. We've heard about Justin Rose, we've heard Paul Casey talk about what it would mean to represent my country at the Olympics. It would be a dream. I know it's I'm a golfer, but it's the Olympics. It's the biggest sporting event in the world. Xander Schauffele, I've mentioned Dustin Johnson. Xander Schauffele, Adam Scott's been quite so-so about it as well. Xander Schauffele basically said, yeah, but the logistics are tricky. There's no opening ceremony. There'll be no experience of Japan. I hear the Olympics is pretty cool, but if you can't really do all that this year because of COVID, and I get the COVID thing, but I just kind of want to hear them have a bit more respect about the Olympics. Is that fair? I know that you're a golfer. You've got the chance to. You've got a green jacket in your locker. You've got US Open trophy.
I haven't got a green jacket. Well, where's that thing? Am I missing something here?
And you can have a gold medal as well. Why would you not? Okay, if you don't want to go and represent your country in the Olympics, at least try and show a bit more respect when you're talking about it in the media.
You're obviously. Yeah, you're a fan of the Olympics. You're a fan.
Do you get that? Am I missing the boat here?
In our game, we have four Olympics every year.
I get that.
We have four majors every year. Now, if you go to any golfer, do you want to win the Wanamaker Trophy, just for an example, which is the PGA Championship? Or do you want to win
the gold medal
at the Olympics?
I'd want to win the Wanamaker and I'd want to win the gold medal.
Yeah, okay, fair point. But if you can only have one.
The Wanamaker.
Do you want to win? Okay, Sarah, if you're going to the Olympics as a lady golfer to represent your country, do you want to win the gold medal or do you want to jump into Poppy's pond?
I'd want to win. I know what you mean, and I'd still take majors over a gold medal, absolutely, if I was a professional golfer, I would. But I'd still want to go and give myself a chance of winning a gold medal at the Olympics. And even if I didn't take that decision, I would certainly be respectful about the Olympics in any media interview I do. And I just feel there's been a bit of a lack of respect. Do you get that?
Yes, I do. Totally.
if you said, right, you didn't want to do the Olympics, wouldn't you come out in the media? Wouldn't you? You'd play it differently. You'd still keep the respect for the greatest sporting occasion in the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, but you're obviously a huge fan of the Olympics.
I'm a huge sport fan.
I only really watch the 100, you know, the 100 metres. I like that. I like the 100 metres. Usain Bolt. The swimming, when Thorpe used to swim. I used to, you know, the torpedo. Yeah, torpedo, when he used to get in the swim and blow them all out of the water. And you know, there's a few. I don't mind the gymnastics. I like the gymnastics as well. But I'm not a huge fan of the Olympics. I like golf. I like watching Chelsea play. I like watching the Wallabies play the Poms. I like all that sort of stuff. I'm not really big into the javelin.
I love the javelin.
Do you?
Yeah. I used to chuck the javelin in my school sport days. Anyway, should we agree to disagree on that? Good, bad, and the fugly.
The good, I'm going the good, is what we saw in Sweden with the ladies playing with the men.
Yeah,
I thought that was, there should be more of it. I've said it, I think we said it in the last show, that I'd like to see the World Cup men and women. I think there's more. The ladies, we've got to get together more and grow our game together. And I was a huge fan. That was very good to watch that on television, watching the ladies play with the men.
It was. Same
well, the
course.
Men play with the ladies.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Same course, same event. Fantastic. Yeah. I'm going to go Yuko Sasso swing. Did you see at the US Open, US Women's Open, modelled her swing on Rory McIlroy? And for any of you listening, go and have a look at YouTube videos or some content. Yuka Sasso won the US Open, modeled her swing on Rory McIlroy. It is spitting image of Rory McIlroy. It's incredible. Yeah. Have a look at it? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I've seen it. They had a cutter last week as well. Yeah. And it's like, it's like Adam Scott as well, modeling his swing on Tiger Woods when he first came out. Everyone went, well, gee whiz, look at that. Look, you can, you know, as kids, and you don't want, your parents can't afford to go and get you some lessons. Get some videos.
Amazing.
And find your favourite golfer and copy it.
It's crazy.
Be yourself,
yeah,
but copy their swing.
Crazy how good it is. So well done to her. That was an amazing performance. My bad, I'm going US Open rough. Just because it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
What?
The rough at Torrey Pines. I'm just like, oh.
You didn't like that?
Well, I like it as a spectacle, but the thought of being in it just gave me nightmares.
Yeah. I've got no bad at the moment. I think our game is in such a great place. the ladies' games in a great place. You've got the quarters and you've got all these great players. I just wish more, what I've just said, I just wish we could get together a little more and grow our game together. We're getting there, mm-hmm. but there's more to be done, and I'm sure a lot more will be done. So the rough at Torrey, well, you don't have to worry about it, do you?
No, I don't. I actually played there a few years ago. I went over for a little holiday and played, and it wasn't US Open time. So
California,
it was,
how nice.
La Jolla.
Oh,
we love
La Jolla.
La Jolla.
Yeah, it's absolutely magnificent.
It's probably both our favorite spots on tour.
Yeah,
isn't
it was just it is just yep. It truly is absolutely magnificent. And there's this funny smell in the air. You walk everywhere and it's like they're all puffing these things and it's all allowed. It's quite interesting.
Which company are you keeping?
No, I walk down the rough and they're all at it. I mean, and there's police everywhere and you're like, well, what's going on?
What about the streaker at the US Open? I'm sure he might have been.
Well, he was on them. He's on the whoopee wee, yeah. Wasn't he? He's got to be on something.
Perfectly legal in California. Fugly. Now, did you hear about this? This was one of my favourites. Well, actually, I shouldn't really be laughing at it because it was pretty bad. A player was arrested after a fight broke out in a Corn Ferry Tour qualifier in Kansas. Now, Luke Smith was arrested after being interviewed by police in the clubhouse following a violent altercation with his playing partner, Austin Daly. So Smith had his father as caddy and apparently took exception to Daly's pace of play. And Daly was annoyed by Smith's refusal to help him search for balls. Apparently he was having a shocker. Or tend the pin. Tempers flared on Vince and basically Smith lamped him one.
We shouldn't laugh. You and I shouldn't be laughing. If you and I were in front of the screen in there at the Sky Studios, we'd have serious faces. We'd be like, but that's
brilliant. I mean,
bang, have that, son. Keep up with me. Don't play slowly anymore.
That tickled me a little bit. What's your fugly?
Oh, my fugly. Well, I'm quite sick of this. We were speaking in the last pod that about the world tour. I'm sick of it popping up all the time. These world tours, these alphabet tours, they've all got different initials, and we don't know where they're coming from. I just like to know. And they say they're going to be playing by 2023, the start of 2023, and we don't know anything about it. I think it's unfair, and I think what we've got to do is we've got to all get together and go, right, what is happening? And I just think there's a lot of people out there, and especially the public, the paying public. Without the paying public, we haven't got any tours. So everyone deserves the right, they have the right to know what's going on. So that's my fugly right there. That's a rant and a fugly. Let's get on with it and let's find out what's, if we're going to do it, let's do it. If we're not, let's not.
Agree. Right, and before we head off, a prediction. The next time we get together, episode 3 of Sturkers and Radar, what's going to have happened? What's your punchy prediction?
Now, I'm going to go right now who's going to win the Open, who's a very good win player.
Is he Australian?
Yes.
Mark Leishman?
No. I'm going to have it's going to be one that is just all going to go, what are you on about? Which, you know, I've lived with that all my life. Matt Jones.
Oh. That is a punchy prediction. Good player.
Good wind player. Mm. Exceptional wind player. Grew up in Sydney, one of the windiest cities in the world. And I know how much he loves the Open. He hasn't played in it much, but he's in it. And I think that's a 200 to one of there, everybody. So get your checkbooks out and lamp on.
Nice, love it. Can I go John Rahm again? John Rahm will be a...
You're going John Rahm.
John Rahm will be a two-time major champion by the time that we next speak. No, I'm going to go Spieth.
Are you? Yeah. 2016, Birkdale.
I'm going Spieth again, yeah. Okay. Is that way out?
It's out there. It's out there but at the moment, but yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get it right again, so I thought I'd give you a bit of a chance.
No, I think I think that's not bad.
I think that's just about all we've got time for as well. So just to thank you all as well for your support on social media. A reminder, Sturkers Radar on Twitter, at Sturkers Radar on Twitter, and on Instagram, at Sturkers and Radar Pod on Insta.
Before I forget, I was going through my social media a couple of days ago, and I saw you all dressed up, like nice...
When we talked about this the other day, you didn't say dressed up, you actually said fluffed up.
But the thing is, when I saw that, did you have to do that yourself?
What, the fluffing?
No, because you're not allowed makes now.
I had a makeup artist, a good friend of mine, Sarah White, who did my hair and makeup for that shoot. So, yeah.
But
so
that looked...
It was brilliant, yeah. And look, we've had a chat about this.
So what was the mag?
So it was for Attitude magazine.
Right.
Which is a gay lifestyle magazine.
Right.
And, we've talked about this. I'm pretty private at work. I'm pretty private generally. We turn up, don't we? We do our jobs. We appear on Sky week in, week out. But when we're not on Sky doing our thing, yeah, I kind of keep myself to myself.
Yeah.
And I think, I talked about this in the article and we've had a couple of good chats about this. I feel like... I kind of don't really have a voice in that community, and I kind of got to a point where I wanted to.
Yes.
And I struggled with stuff for a long time. And it's funny, we were chatting the other day, and I said to you, I just didn't feel the environment that we work in is very, or it was very male dominated. I think it's changed. I've been at Sky, 8 years now? I think when I first joined, and I think the industry, when I first sort of got into it, was pretty male-dominated. I think things have changed massively. I think we've seen a huge societal change as well, haven't we? The world we live in now is very different to even 5 years ago. And I think when I first joined, I wanted to do my job. I didn't want to be labelled. I'm me. I'm who I am. Sexuality, I think, is just one part of it.
But we love you for that. But I can't understand why people, why you would worry, because...
One of my big worries was you, I think, because we are good friends, we're good buddies now, and we host a podcast together, and we get on and we have a giggle. When I first joined Sky, I couldn't imagine having this conversation with you. I thought you were
a macho Aussie.
I thought you were big, hairy, macho Aussie, and I was probably a bit intimidated by you, and thought I couldn't imagine this. And now I know that you're a soft puppy dog with a heart of gold.
So I can't understand that now. Because I come from Sydney, which is probably the most outside San Fran, probably the most cosmopolitan city in the world.
Yeah, and you've been amazing in your response. We've had conversations before, haven't we? When we've been at the European tour, PGA tour, we've had good chats, and you've told me a bit about your private life. And
I take people for what they are.
But this is it. This is, we should be, as human beings, we should be kind, we should be accepting, we should be non-judgmental. And I probably, because I struggle with it myself, in the arena that I'm in, I just didn't want that. I didn't want that extra attention. Just didn't need it. Didn't want it. But as I've got older, and I say in the article, I don't really care anymore.
No, and nor should you.
Yeah, and I think the response has been amazing. So thanks.
And it will be, and it will continue to be, because people love you. Well, I mean, because you're just a... Look, I'm not saying this because we're doing this. You're a lovely, lovely person. And not only are you a great presenter and... a media star, but it's true, and good for you, absolutely good for you, and
that's really kind.
And everyone should be the same. Everyone if anyone's out on tour and they're worried about things,
like I was saying about the Matt Wolf thing, everybody, and this is one of my favorite sayings in life: everybody's fighting a battle that everybody else knows nothing about. So. We've got to be happy in our own skin. We've got to be comfortable, and we've got to be nice and kind to other human beings.
Absolutely.
And I don't like anything. Acceptance is key for me. I don't like anything judgmental. So, look, I massively appreciate you for...
How do you know I'm hairy?
What's that?
You called me hairy.
Because I remember one of my favorite things about you was... One of my favorite things in America. Do you remember that time in America when we were doing a piece by 80? I can't remember where it was. Was it Phoenix or I don't know. Anyway, and you'd seen this young lady who you'd taken a bit of a shine to, and you shouted across the 18th green, do you like short, fat, hairy Australians? That was actually your chat-up line. And she turned around, took a sip of her margarita and walked away. So that's the only reason why I know. But no, thank you. You're a sweetheart.
No, absolutely. No, you are.
Oh, it's a love
fest. I'm nothing without you.
It's a love fest. Big thanks as well to Studley Wood today.
Yep.
Studley Wood Golf Club in Oxfordshire for hosting us. And of course, big thanks to Ping.
Play your best. And yeah, you've got to get the new driver. I've got the new G425 and it's going miles long.
Hope you've enjoyed episode 2. We'll see you soon. Sturkers and Radar.
Ta-da.
Uncut.
This has been a Monkey Pants Productions podcast.